The first ever episode of Hot Take Point Made is brought to you by eSportsBet, the industry's leading crypto odds matrix. They still run their classic first-time deposit bonus of 50% on up to 200 USDT. Just use our referral link in the description box. Right, this is going to be a brand new show called Hot Take Point Made. And as the title suggests, this show, I actually came up with it. The premise was, I noticed, this will sound a little bit weird, so I'll have a quick digression, right 5 seconds into the show, because that's just my style. If you don't like it, get off this channel, get off the internet, in fact. I run the whole internet. I am the internet. There you go. I've leveled that up. We started with already the first hot take, I just am the whole internet, so like one more man or something. So basically, I remember back in the day, there was a situation in esports, right? It still goes on in League of Legends now, where this might sound strange, but people probably know Koreans in esports are some of the best competitors ever in like RTS games, MOBA games. But the problem they always had is in their culture, they're from a Confucian culture, which is supposedly, they call it like an honor culture. It's all about like what your public face is and like your name, your family name, and like what your reputation is incredibly important in those cultures. Like in those cultures, you never want to be thought of as like rude or impolite or an idiot. Like you can't get away with it in the West like you can. Like, you know, in the West some people will be like, who cares what people think, like, you know, Jake Paul got the bag. Like, that's just like our hierarchy of values. Over there it is still massively important if you're thought of as like rude and idiot, whatever. Like I say, so what they had to do in esports was, because they had all these top competitors and they're playing each other in massive finals and big matches, but naturally they're never going to trash talk each other because it would be considered so like out of pocket to do it. They actually, on Korean broadcasts, created explicit segments that were basically called trash talk segments. And what they would tell the players before the camera goes live is like, it's okay, because in this segment it's almost like theatre. You're supposed to trash talk him. So for example, if the guy on the other team was your former teammate, pick out something funny about like when he used to play together and rib him on it and be like, you know, we used to both say we were going to win the World Championship one day. That's going to be true for one of us. You know, you do it like that. You make it like some witty, like movie style, wrestling style moment where, in the same way as in wrestling, you know it's fake and it's a promo. They're sort of allowed to do it, right? So people don't take it too seriously when they do the hot takes because they know they're sort of supposed to do it. And spoiler, on the Korean broadcast, I can tell you right now, the producer guy essentially is like a professional shit talker slash instigator in that regard. Like, he's actually telling you when the camera's off, like, yeah, but that other guy's going to say this about it. You know, he's like hyping it up to get you to say more and more spicy things. So the point of why I say all of that is to say this. In esports right now, in Counter-Strike, this is my native game. Counter-Strike is the ultimate shit-talker game. If people don't know, like the UK scene especially, that's probably the biggest thing that held it back, is everyone's just 24-7 talking shit on the opponent, on teammates. And so as a result, right, I'm used to Counter-Strike being the spiciest place, but I actually do get the vibe in the last few years on broadcast. So many people are just scared to be the target of all the fans' ire if they give the hot take, especially if the hot take's like one where you say it in the moment because you, it's going to be fun, but it ends up being like, as in, if you use like the Schofield measurement on like the actual like peppers or whatever, it ends up being way spicier than you expected. So the classic one I always go to, because I do think this for real scared straight a load of the analysts, was when Pimp, right at the absolute peak of Simple in the online era, when he was like dropping 45 every game and he was having to try and like single-handedly beat Vitality and Astralis, way better teams back then. This is before Bait, this is when we were online, right? This is when obviously Zeus has only just left, right? If people don't remember, Pimp had that take where he just said on blast, like, we've got to really ask ourselves the question. Maybe it's Simple that's the problem in Na'Vi. And the problem with that was, that is probably the hottest take you could ever construct in esports. And indeed, it ended up being so hot. Essentially, even he couldn't handle it. Like, he actually just went so out of control. And I remember, he just had like, it's like World War Z or something. The entire like CISC just swarmed him on Twitter, like, and then like, you know, I imagine as they left, there was nothing but like bones and that, you know, like a vulture, like, like, so basically the problem is, I feel like in the modern day everyone's going the other way now and everyone's trying to be safe with the takes. So the point of this show, don't worry, there won't be a massive intro like this every time, I thought on the first one we'll explain it though. The point of this show is that's actually going to be the gimmick slash structure of the show. What we do is we prep a few hot takes, we might come up with some fun ones in the moment, and the idea is you start with the hot take, so you just start with some crazy line like we'll do in a second, and then after that we just do real analysis and it becomes a talk show and we talk about that point and we see what people's points are and do some back and forth. So my two main guys for this one, it's going to be a show where we're just going to have main hosts and we'll see if we're going to do guests in rotation or not. It's going to be Maui Snake, who I obviously do Snake and Banter with on this channel. There's a new episode out from a few days ago, if you click. There's Cassad here, who I did all those long interviews with. Like, Cassad's actually got a pretty unique approach, Maui. Like, you just straight up, like, started working with me gradually over time. Cassad's approach is pretty good. He just basically just kept saying, like, do you want to do another interview? And it's like, yeah, I do actually. And then eventually just like somehow he's just here on the content. So he's backdoored his way into this whole thing. Fair play. I guess we have that saying in English, you know, if you don't ask, you don't get, Cassad. So there you go. You got it. Well done.
And you got to go for it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And also, low key, if you look, now I realise, Maui, I thought we were just doing great content. I'm the mark here. I'm the pawn in Cassad's game. Because first of all, he used Snake and Banter ages ago to trash EG, which did start the whole like hatred against how bad they are. Then he used it to trash G2, and there's rumours he might join G2. Apparently, we're just all pawns in his media game, man. He's like fucking Jose Mourinho. So like, what's he? I thought we were just doing great content, you know.
He's the Serbian FNS.
Exactly. It's all his master plan. Exactly. He's just next
I like the Jose Mourinho comparison.
There you go. Right? True.
Yeah, I'll get it.
Well, the joke is, if people don't know, FNS actually became like the best in game leader in Valorant, if people don't know. That's how weird a dimension that is. That is truly through the looking glass. So let's start out. So what we'll do on this one is, Maui, give me one of yours. What is the first inaugural hot take? And as I say, it can be, you can make it as funny as you want on the initial hot take. So you phrase it. What is the hot take? We don't know these, by the way. We're going to do all these fresh. Go on.
Okay. Mine is, as it stands, simple is the GOAT. But it can be in dispute as soon as next year if Device actually wins both majors. If Device wins both majors next year, I don't think you can actually you can't discredit the argument that Device has passed Simple once again. Because as it stands, in terms of some of the numbers right now, Simple has 21 MVPs in tournaments. Device has 19. You expect that if he wins some of those tournaments with the major, that he's going to win a couple MVPs. Maybe he's in contention with BlameF, but right now, also on top of that, Device has been in the top 20 more years than Simple has. So this is another strike for Simple. And also, we've just seen lately what Simple's record is in major finals. Like, he's not looking too hot there, whereas Device, he's got a spotless record right now. And that's what so many people care about when it comes to big moments, big games, are you winning in the grand finals when you find yourself there? And yeah, it's a bit of a journey that we have to go on to even entertain this point right now. But I'll say that if Device and Astralis level up in 2023, if they win both majors, you could easily argue that Device has become the GOAT of CSGO.
Here's the thing, he did understand the assignment, Cassad, because he did come out right out of the gate with a blazing hot take. And to be fair, he even did then, like, when he first said the sentence, I almost did have bad impulse controls. Like, whoa, 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 but then I realised he did, like, temper it gradually as he explained. So go on, hit me with your thought. What's your initial reaction to this? It's a pretty spicy thing, I will say, Cassad.
I'll tell you
There's a lot of heavy lifting on that if they win two majors.
If Astralis wins two majors, I'm going to eat my own leg.
There you go.
Right in this show, right here. That will never happen. Like, that's never going to happen, right? But to take your point, it's just Device overcoming Simple. It's just too difficult at this point. Maybe from 2019, if you, like, keep, you know, playing on the same level, playing the same events all the time, Astralis getting their stuff together, right, without this turbulence, yes, that would be a valid point for him to overtake it. But right now, you said that he's got a spotless track. He didn't play for more than a year at all. Nothing. And now he returned. They played this Tier 3 event. They lost immediately, actually the second match. He played well, I'll give him that. But it's just a mountain. It's just picture, like, you know, Mount Everest, and then double it. And then he has to go naked just to climb it to get to that, to win your point. Sure. So it's just so far away. I don't, obviously, Device is a Hall of Fame player. Like, let's not forget that. You said 19 MVPs, 4 majors, the big era behind Astralis. But, you know, getting to the simple slide and contending, you know, contesting his GOAT status is just too far for Device right now. No chance.
Right, the thing on this topic is, I see where you're setting up that. Like, first of all, the thing people have to realize is Maui doesn't mean like that there's like a like realistic chance Astralis wins two majors and then this all happens and it's like inevitable. What he means is, essentially, the real problem with entertaining this premise, I can tell, is that everyone's going to think of current Astralis, which obviously has zero chance right now of winning a major. Like, I don't even have to worry about them coming back and them looking silly in a video. Like, they'd have to make some roster move or something would have to happen, like, Glaive would have to become the god IGL and, like, revolutionize the game or something. With the pieces they have now, obviously they're not winning any majors next year, but what Maui means is, hypothetically, if the team was good enough and Device just plays normally, like a normal amount of matches, he doesn't have any health injuries, and we imagine, like, this part I don't think is very spicy, we imagine he gets back to a really good level as a top opera in the world again. I think that's totally fine to believe. Of all the players who've done comebacks, he seems like the most likely to get his level back, in my opinion. That part's all fine. So if we essentially, what you could just say is, if Device somehow wins two more majors and Simple wins no more majors, he's making like the career argument on the resume angle. Essentially, it's the reason why everyone who's an NFL fan who doesn't want to actually spend 5 seconds, it's going to tell me, of course, Tom Brady's a million times better than Aaron Rodgers or Peyton Manning or something, because they're just looking at one factor, which is how many championships did he get, and they're ignoring the team element. They're just saying, if you want to go out in the argument, obviously that would be a factor people would use, then Device would be number one, because it's real. Like, he would have six majors to Simple's one. He would have, I mean, he doesn't even need to win many more MVPs. Simple has one major MVP, so you know what I mean? Like, obviously, as you say, I noticed you purposely worked it in there, so he'd have more overall MVPs if he won those tournaments. Again, the other part you didn't mention is, obviously, in theory, we need Simple not to win any majors, not to win any more MVPs, and we're like, let's keep that number the same, basically. So you're making a career-based argument. The problem I have is, first of all, obviously, I don't really do, like, career resume is my number one factor. Like, I always go off eye test and how good I actually think you played individually. And so I actually think this is quite an interesting point to bring up, because if people don't know, it's basically the new argument in the NBA, which is goes like this. Well, since LeBron is going to have the most points ever, then doesn't that make him, could that make him the great? It's like a different argument as to why he's the GOAT, right? But the problem is, and this is why I want to spin it back to Maui, is I don't think anyone, except people who only do career resume, like they only count rings or whatever, I'm not actually sure anyone actually does factor in things like total points or like total, like raw, like total, just numbers essentially. Because as far as I can tell, Maui, like this is why I'm using the reference point of the NBA one, because I know you're going to know this. Let's be real, like LeBron could play 10 more years and win a couple more rings, and I'm pretty sure everyone who thinks Michael Jordan's better is never going to say LeBron is better than him, because they're actually doing, let's be real, a qualitative analysis. They're not trying to do it on quantity. They're just saying, with my eye test, I think like Michael Jordan was more clutch or would dominate in a final more, individually is better. That's what they're saying. And so realistically, it's why I actually think, by the way, GOAT discussions are really interesting. People just don't do the groundwork. Because for example, I always want to know this when people do GOAT discussions. Do you actually mean, if we took them like actually Space Jam style in some alien dimension and had them play like in their primes, who would be the best? Is that what you mean by GOAT? Because some people argue that way when they say like the most clutch angle. Or do you mean just their career, look at their career in their era and compare it to the other guy's career, and I think this guy had the overall better career? I don't know. I always don't know where people are coming from, because they take it for granted. We all know what this means. So I'll flip it to you. Would you, you're making it hypothetical, obviously, would you actually consider, can Device ever become your GOAT?
Yes. Yeah. He could become my GOAT, for sure. Okay. No. I actually think if Simple and Navi continue to have the downturn that they seem to be on right now, like, they're not definitely in the form that they were for Stockholm last year, but if they kind of continue being this team that's sort of meddling, that's just kind of touching playoffs here or there, but Astralis actually does start winning S-tier trophies again, they probably need to make a roster move, if we're being honest. Like, they can't play with Mister and expect to do this, but if they actually do make the move that they need to make, like, they get a Shush-type player, and then they actually start winning trophies, and Device is the MVP of these events, then that's why I'm saying the conversation can start as soon as next year. And yes, it's like a huge hypothetical to think that they're going to win both majors. Yeah, but I'm saying that the door is open. The door is by no means shut on this conversation by the end of next year, barring that a few things go correctly for Astralis. And, you know, if Navi wins maybe one tournament next year, but then Astralis win four, like, then it's like we see the direct impact. And I think that one thing that also kind of hurts Simple a little bit in this conversation is that in terms of career achievement, in terms of the team doing better, when Navi was not playing with Simple, they, like, right before, they came in, second place, No, or like, no. Even, yeah,
Oh,
I
you
guess
mean
if
before they had
even
Simple and
looking
Silent
way back,
History, right? Okay.
yeah, looking way back to like 2015, 2016, they, without Simple, they came second place at Columbus. They came second place at Cluj-Napoca, and then they top aided at Cologne. And once they got Simple on Na'Vi, they were still just kind of like a playoff team. They didn't even make the playoffs of Krakow, for example. Like, they weren't always just smooth sailing. Like, they didn't instantly just get better with Simple, but we've seen the precipitous fall off with Astralis without Device. Like, and so you can start to believe that the system that made many people credit Glaive and Zonic to isn't actually as much of a system as it was just Device being the best player ever and actually elevating this team to heights that they never otherwise could have even gotten close to.
Okay, come on, you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, yes. I mean, I've been listening to you two for the past 5 minutes, and I heard so many imagine and if this
Sure.
and if that. It's
But we
just
see
too
that
many.
Na'Vi didn't even get that much better
It's
with Simple in
just
terms of major placements.
too many things. Like, take Astralis, for example, right now. Have you seen any indication they can do anything close to winning S tier tournament right now? They have Mister, they have Zipnix, they have Glaive who is struggling, they have Blame who is playing too defensively but getting the numbers, and they have Device coming back with a small sample size. He played well, but is this the old Device? We don't know, right? We're gonna know that in Katowice, in Pro League, in the RMRs, and whatever comes next. So what happens if they don't qualify for the major game, which is a possibility, because they have two players who don't belong in that team, which is Mister and Zipnix. So they have not shown no indications they're heading into direction of winning a possible tournament, not even a tier two tournament, let alone like a big one. So that's a, like I said, that's a double Mount Everest thing that we have to think. So the door, like you said it's not shut. I think it's concrete shut. Like there is no chance by the end of the year that can actually be a conversation. Maybe in 2 years, if they get their, roster changes right and they get back into the system. They obviously don't even have a coach. Look at their coach right now. Who is that guy? Now that we are thinking about Handan, is he coming back?
Seems
What's the
like it,
story there? Like, it seems like it, but we don't know, obviously. Like, it's Astralis. You don't know what the hell are they going to do, right? Zonic is not there. Can you name five coaches right now that can be on top level for Astralis?
It's
On
pretty
one
hard.
hand,
It's pretty hard.
pretty
It'd be
hard,
hard to
right?
name three, I think, mate. There's not
Yes,
many, so.
exactly. So where does it coming from? Where is how is it gonna is the Device gonna be like carrying the whole team on his back? Absolutely not. He didn't do that when they were the best. It was, Zonic, it was Glaive, it was Zipnix who was playing well,
I
it
think the
was
Zonic
Magus.
argument is really flimsy now to be the GOAT coach. It's so like Vitality has
He is.
done not much at all. Like this team
Okay,
hasn't fixed their problems. They still look like they have like they still Sphinx has not integrated into this system well. You think the GOAT coach would be able to do this? And I don't know if the Zonic argument
wait a
is
minute,
best
wait a
now
minute. Let
anymore.
me just
Yeah,
check. So Maui's actually taking his Simple hot take, and he's actually now backdooring a hot take that Simple is Zonic is not the GOAT coach. So that's another fucking hot take in itself, Maui. Right, come on then, hit us with that. What's the reasoning for that? Come on.
Well, I think Blade is. I think
Okay.
Blade's better now. I think Blade has proven that he's done more with less. So that's kind of where I'm at with that
The only
statement.
counter I would
Yeah.
have to that is if you're gonna do the like, then Device will have like 6 minutes. Blade has fuck all me. He has the one. The joke is he's the Simple in that equation. Surely, on the accomplishment side, right? The problem is again, if we're using accomplishment, Sonic wins, right? That's why I've
It's
always
so,
thought it's a
okay.
tougher bit.
I mean, you said he's done more with less. He has the best freaking player in the world of all time in the
But
team.
then, but
That's
nobody
not
gives.
less, that's
Okay,
more.
but the thing is, no. He has. But the thing is that Zonic had an IGL that people respect to this day.
Okay.
Nobody's giving Boomich credit. I give Boomich a lot of credit, but I know that nobody else does. And maybe if you want to take that side, you can't say that one thing that Blade is not an incredible coach or like a better coach than Zonic, and then say that Boomich is a worse IGL than Glaive. Like these statements themselves are just conflicting. Like if Glaive is the GOAT IGL and Zonic's the GOAT coach. Then what is Blade for winning what he's won with Boomich, who people consider a laughingstock?
He's close second. That's what he is. Close
Okay.
second. He's up there. I'm not arguing that he's not up there. He's definitely up. He's made like some incredible lineup changes with Bit and Perfecto, and you're getting Boomich to be the IGL of that team that clearly has problems, internal problems managing to get to be the best team in the world right now. So I give him credit for that. But overall, the system that Zonic and Glaive together created with the help of the other players was unique at the time, and it was a game changer. And that's how they won four majors, multiple titles, and that's why I would put him, as a number one. And then Blade is a number two. Zeus maybe is a number three at this moment, right? But Zeus is retired. He doesn't care about it anymore. So he's not in the equation anymore. So Zonic, and then close second. I can't say that, you know, Zonic is far better, but I can't say that he's worse. So I would just put him as a number one, simply because his team is the one that changed the game of Counter-Strike back in 2018 and 19. And some of
the by the way, two things to say. One, just as an aside, this is also why I actually thought Kassad would be a good third person, Maui. Because if people don't know, if Kassad doesn't agree with you, he'll never agree with you. So it's just about you can explicate why they disagree with you. But you're never just going to convince. Like, that's actually one thing. There's the other thing. A lot of people on desks, like, for the sake of time and the premise, they'll just be like, yeah, go with that, whatever. Like, he's not going to. So already, it's okay, because we're going to give our spicy takes and we're going to stick to our own guns. So there's that. And then the other thing is, I want to quickly push back on one thing, Maui, and then we'll go to the next hot take, even though you did, like, actually backdoor a second almost equally spicy hot take into the equation. My pushback is just this, because I want to get where you're coming from on this. I understand that take you made a while ago of, like, Simple hasn't done that well in some of these finals, like, it's true, in Claude and Antwerp finals. You expected if he played normally, they'd just win the game. They probably would. So that was a little bit disappointing. But one thing I didn't get, because I don't really agree with it, is that take you had, because it's tied into this, where you were, like, saying that Simple's, like, individual status as the GOAT was in question, but then you said because of people like Monacy. The reason why that's crazy to me is this, because Monacy hasn't even done 1 year that would be Simple's worst year yet. And so the problem I have with that discussion, here's what's different, okay? What makes the major discussion different, if you go on a number of majors, puts you in the convo for best ever, is winning a major is binary. Like, if you win the major, I can't win the major. So every time you win the major, by definition, you catch up to me. Like, actually, yeah, if Device doesn't win any more majors and Simple wins them all, suddenly it'll be Simple 4 and Device 4, because he'll stay at 4, right? The problem with play is, one, while you're playing, let's say Monacy becomes the best player in the world. If Simple's, like, number 3 player in the world, he's still, like, adding to his own resume. And then let's be real. I think people really don't appreciate how insane the longevity of Simple at the top is. Like, for real, guys, before Simple, if you did that for 1 year, you would instantly be a GOAT contender of all time. That's why, like, Kenny S said, dude, he didn't even do it for a year, and he was instant contender number one. If you were, like, Olofmeister, by the way, that's, like, 1 year. If you were Shocks, like, let's say he split it up, that might be, like, let's say, like, 8 months, but, like, 3 times, but over a 5 year span. Simple just did it from, like, the beginning of a 5 year span to the end of a 5 year span. And at worst, people were saying he was a 1B to Zewu for, like, 1 or 2 years. Like, that, I don't think, like, there's no, like, if someone does that, like, there's only one guy ever did that. One guy ever did that. And I still, I'll be real. The reason I find Simple, I actually am in awe of his player. Because to this day, I don't know how he did it, mate. I still don't know sometimes when he's at the top level. In fact, I even often go the other way, mate. When he doesn't show up in some of these massive games, the amount of times I look at the scoreboard, I'm like, he's still got, like, 23 kills, though. Like, I'm swear he's done nothing in this game. The guy just is goated. And, like, in the eye test, I don't know if anyone can ever beat him. I don't think even Zewu can beat his eye test. It's just too crazy for me. So I'll push back on that. What do you think of that, Maui?
Well, when I made that statement before that Monacy could eventually pass Simple, I did say that it was, like, give him 5 years, though. Like, it had to be a long resume of winning. Like, it's not that I actually think that Monacy can even find the achievements to do that, but I think that it's just that when I made that initial point a while back, it was just that Simple has left the door open in terms of career achievements, which is kind of the same point I'm making today, that he's dropped the ball in several major playoffs, or, like, didn't always perform in those grand finals, those moments are just etched into our memory, whereas Monacy has a chance to basically never do that. Like, when he lost that Kato finals, he still played fantastically, for example. So I think that Monacy has the chance to write his own history, which could eventually contend with Simple. I don't think he's anywhere close right now. Like, I'm not gonna die on that hill, but I just think that if there's anybody that I could see in the future, and it might even move on to another version of Counter-Strike, Monacy might be that guy.
Monacy definitely has the potential, right, to be a superstar level.
Could be amazing,
right? He doesn't have the rifle potential right now, or the pistol potential like Simple does. Simple, like you said it, Duncan, before, like, he was doing it since 2015. You know, with all the guns. He was a rifler at one point. He is good in clutches. He is good in, you know, with an AWP, with a rifle, with everything. Monacy is not quite there. I don't think he's even in the conversation at this moment. Potential is there, yeah. It's the first year. He had a lot of ups and downs, and, like, you know, with the stuff with the EG, not EG, but G2, you know, with... we're going to get to that
later. It's all right.
We're gonna get to that later. But the thing is, like, with the G2, with, you know, with the changes of IGLs and the styles and the rumblings and everything that's going on, obviously he didn't have the full opportunity to grow as much as he should. So, but he still has time. I don't know if he can reach the level of Simple, but the potential is definitely there.
Did you know that as well as all the big esports, CSGO, League of Legends, Dota 2, Rainbow Six, Valorant, FIFA, Rocket League, Esports Bet also offers football bets on the World Cup. So if you have a particular team you want to bet on and follow, they have all different types of bets and different odds and props. Check out the site. Now, if you've never deposited crypto on the site and you want to bet on football or esports, they also have their first time deposit bonus, which is a up to 100 USDT bet forgiveness bonus, where if you bet up to 100 USDT and lose on your first ever bet with crypto on the site, you can go to the Discord, discord.gg/esportsbet, and you can message the mod mill, say Thorin or Last Free Nation sent you, and they will credit your original stake up to 100 USDT. I'd suggest put it on an underdog, maybe Morocco or something. Right, okay then, we'll move on, Kassad. Give me your one of your hot takes. What was yours?
The thing is, like, I was thinking which direction should I go. I'm going to change it a little bit from a player perspective into the map things. Like, I think that my hot take is going to be that Vertigo doesn't leave the map pool for the next 3 years.
Oh, God, why are you even saying that out loud?
No.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that. Come on, please.
Okay.
Come on, then hit me with it. Why?
The thing is, like, you can look at Maui. You can look at all these maps. They're all the same. All the same design. Everything is the same. You can look at Mirage, Inferno, even Ancient right now. Everything is about the structure, the map control, and all this garbage that we have seen all the time, right? That's fine. That can be interesting. That can be very competitive. That can be, you know, in sense of a strategical point of view and everything else. But we need something different. Like, at least one map needs to be different. One map needs to be brawly like it is. Like Vertigo, you know, some teams are aggressive, some teams likes to fight early on, you know, and map like that allows them to do that, you know, like, let's say for Furia, you know, they like to charge around, that map is right for them, you know, and I would love to see that map stay simply because it's different from the others. If you take a look at Mirage, still middle on the middle and left, and it is the A side, on the right is the B side, holes, and that's it, right? Connector, every other map is the same. Look at middle on Vertigo. It's just like one little tiny passage, and that's it. And then we have Brawly areas in the ramp and on B, right? So you can choose to go early fight area. I like the fact that we have one map like that, you know, out of seven, and as the other ones are simply the same, and then you can go attack. If you don't want to be a Brawly team, you just, you know, put that map aside, put it as a permaban, and you don't have to play it, and you can rely on a structure. But if you have instinct in players that likes to fight early on, that likes to get flashed in, run through the smokes, like Art, like, you know, all these players that are aggressive, just give them one map like it is, and then don't move it. Just don't remove it. You can readjust it a little bit here and there, but don't remove it overall, because I like it to be there. Yes.
So you're saying you like? Do you like Vertigo?
He actually sounds. Here's the thing. It sounds like he thinks like it's necessary in the map pool so that more styles of play can flourish.
I love it. Yeah, shouldn't go anywhere.
That's a hot take in itself. That he actually really likes fucking Vertigo. So okay, hit me with it, Maui. Come on.
So the prediction side of things, I think that we're gonna see Ancient go away before Vertigo. So I think that Valve has already shown that they care about amount of playtime, and Ancient has just not been adopted by the masses. Whereas Vertigo, actually, there are some arguments for it, and I know actually Kassad's not the only person in this camp. I, for one, just hate the narrative building on Vertigo. I think that it's, generally speaking, still quite one-dimensional. I think we've moved past the time of saying that it's just an A-ramp simulator, because people do actually work that B-side a lot, but I still just think that the middle of the map is generally devoid of much interaction, and I find that if you can just sit a single CT on the middle of a map, which is supposed to open up all the rotation points, it doesn't lead to the most complex gameplay. And I get also the side that you're saying that people are, they want to brawl. And I think that what A-Ramp gives us is, like, if Banana were double the size and actually almost double the importance. You basically then have a ramp. I just wish that they did a little bit of a rework with it. I would want them to do something to make middle a little bit more valuable, because I actually really liked the, I didn't like the initial nuke rework, but I like where nuke is today. And I think that there's potential, at least that I've seen the potential before from Valve, to show that when they have their hands on a map, they can make something a lot better. But as it stands, I guess the pushback I would have is that there's going to be at least one, I would call it, major change, like in terms of rotations or in terms of how a position plays out on Vertigo in the next 3 years, if it stays.
Okay. Well, I'll hit you with some takes on this one. First of all, I am a well-known Vertigo hater, but part of the problem I have, I actually think, isn't just the map, but in a way it is, because the problem is, in Counter-Strike, I actually think that teams are quite lazy, and that essentially they could put in more work on certain things they could do on maps, but if certain things just work and those are like defined as like, this is the way to play, a lot of them just fall in line and just do the same things and have some variation of what everyone else do. So for example, I can't quite tell if teams haven't figured this out or if we need to tweak the map, but I always thought the biggest flaw of Vertigo isn't just like, as you say, like the A-Ramp simulator. Spoiler, that was always going to eventually change just by understanding of basic meta play, which is if you're always going A, there's going to be like increased advantage to pushing the B to see if they rotate a man over or keep them honest and see if they can gamble stack. So there's always going to be a reason that you do that anyway. But more importantly to me, the part I always thought was the most flawed on that map is that ladder is just so fucking worthless. It's worthless. Like, you never see anything happen with that. In theory, that ladder could be the whole map. Like, if that somehow was one where it's like you really did have to worry constantly about one person just doing a crazy, like, ladder flank as their teams come up the ramp or something. If that was really, like, a real concern, then the map would be super dynamic and you'd have to have a really good, like, set. But the problem is that's not even a threat, really. Like, people don't have to worry about that. It's not really actually, it's almost never used, you'll notice. In fact, the odd time someone even does do, like, a big flank nowadays, it is just he got past the timing or the CT on the B stairs and you just got behind. That's it. So the problem is the variance on the map of play, it is quite boring in my opinion. There can be teams that are good at it. I will say the one thing I'll give credit to is I'll give them at least this. They did pass one of my tests for a map, which is at least I can't say about Vertigo. Everyone ignored it as a pick. Right? They didn't. Absolutely, teams, if you want to go back in time. Fucking Gambit used to love this map if it was available. Fury, as you say, obviously always played this map. I think the Virtus Pro with the Kindar was playing this map all the time. These teams would pick it. So that, I'll give it up. That usually does mean there's something to the map. Because the problem with the Ancient side, just to use that as a reference point, is what tells me Ancient does not belong as a map is not only does no one really seem to like it, like you don't hear people bigging it up at all, but more importantly, dude, even the teams that have the 75-80% win rates, if they're in a scenario like Heroic was, where they can pick it as a punt, they don't pick it. They'll maybe play it as the third map, but they're not going to pick it. Like, what that tells me is, look, if I ever gone to my head, basically, I'm not fucking putting my faith in that map. And it's like, bro, you're the best on that map. So that is always a worry to me. So I'll say Vertigo's passed that test in that regard. And as long as Ancient exists, I've got bigger enemies than fucking Vertigo. I've got bigger fish to fry. I've got to get rid of Ancient first. Then I get rid of Vertigo. So I'll give it on that level. But I don't know. That's a terrifying prospect, Kassan. 3 more years.
Listen, I'm going to add to your leather point.
Come on.
The thing is, like, the reason why you say it's useless, it's not because it's worthless. It's just people are not using it the right way. It's like lazy, like I told you before, YouTube coaches, lazy IGLs, lazy teams are not using it properly. If you have a T-side team that is playing a 3-1-1-3 default on their T-side, which means 3 players on A ramp, 1 on B, 1 on middle, watching that ladder, I'm gonna, you know, gamble a little bit 1 or 2 rounds and just send nobody on B and pressure them on ramp just to pull that guy from middle a little bit. After I get the kill, he's gonna come down, try to help ramp. I'm gonna sneak my B player into the ladder. And that's how you make ladder useful, right? In some situations, once or twice. It doesn't have to be every round. So that's a small trap that comes to my mind when it comes to ladder. But it can be used right now. And people are just brawling left and right, which is fine as well if you're a team like that. But overall, I think the map is just fine. I agree with Maui. It could be tweaked a little bit on some positions. I wouldn't touch middle all that much because it would make it, you know, like every other map. But maybe a little bit. That's just no more than that.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. All right. One, I'm right, right?
Here's one for you, because this is going to be a spicy take. Right? Oh. It's implied by the fact that, like, now there's this thing where 100 Magiclets in the news, his ban gets shortened. Magically, after Trace, they didn't appoint a big-name coach for Astralis. They put, like, the Academy coach or whatever the fuck in place. It's implied as well with Richard Lewis's story a few months ago where he found that, like, Hunden worked for Astralis, but, like, designing AIM Lab tutorials. And then they even said his Astralis contact, like, but we probably would give him a job if he was unbanned. It's implied, if people don't get it, Hunden is the next coach for Astralis. They just haven't chosen yet when to announce it. And it seems like that is going to happen. So if I assume that does happen, here is my hot take. Funny thing is, this shouldn't even be a hot take, but it is. That's just the nature of the industry. Remember, it's also not just what we think. It's a perception, right? Hunden, actually, in my opinion, will be a really good coach. I actually think even, like, there are reasons not to sign to Astralis, which is just based on what he did and against Astralis specifically. That would be a reason not to, because potentially you could lose the locker room. Maybe some of those players think, fuck this guy, I don't know. I don't know how much of the players wanting him and the org wanting him, because to be fair, maybe the players also don't want him. I mean, you know, in Astralis, you're not going to be working with the absolute best Danish talent. You're probably going to have some up-and-coming player, which, by the way, is right in Hunden's wheelhouse. That's exactly who he's good at getting, moulding, figuring out the role, putting you into a system. I actually think, because to tie in the thing you said earlier, Cassad, I actually agree. I don't think there are that many really good coaches. I think there's a lot of, like, average coaches, and I think actually what lets a lot of them get by is that the competitive playing field's so fucking, the parity, everyone's just average watching a few demos and going, maybe take the connected differently, like that, you know, just basic ass shit. So I actually think if you're Hunden, like, I'm not saying it's gonna be hard, but I think he could walk in, and if he really can apply his whole thing and take it on. Remember, the only thing that was a downside about this guy's game, aside from being an arsehole apparently, was that he was just shit at fragging, and everything else he always looked good. Like, that's why I get why fuckers like him and Crystal just stay around for a million years, because they're always going to find some people and be able to use their strengths to rise up the scene again. So I actually think, even though people might not want it to be true, I think Hunden could actually be a really good coach. I think he really could be. It doesn't mean I like him as a person, but I think he could be awesome for the game. Thoughts?
He's already proven it. He already proved it with Heroic. When they had their incredible rise, mostly during the online era, they started their ranking. Like, they were kind of a, you know, a DreamHack Open sort of team. Like, yes, they would come maybe top four. Sometimes, I guess they would usually make playoffs, but, like, they weren't, I don't even think they were really winning those events. But then by the time Hunden's tenure ended with Heroic, they went from a top, like, 30 team to top three. They were ranked top three on, like, in that online era. And that was in a 5-month window where Hunden was the coach of them. And you could say that a lot of the system that they are still using to this day is because Hunden was able to put that into place. So there's no doubt that he should be valuable for Astralis if he joins that team. He could be one of the big fixes for this team. And okay, maybe we reboot that device discussion at the end of the next year if he's the coach.
All right. Come on, Cassad. What do you think of Hunden?
The thing is, like, are we talking about his in-game, you know, capabilities as a coach, or are we talking about his personality? Or are we talking about both, right? Because the problems that he encountered, the bans, the list of the bans, it's like, you know, everything that happened, how are players going to accept that? You know, true, if he betrayed his last team, Heroic, and he lost teammates, right? You think any of the Heroic, like, shush, is he going to go back working for them? Maui? I don't think so, right? Who are they going to attract with that? No. Who's going to trust him? Nobody, right? If you get a young player that's like 17, 18 years old, what's the first thing he's going to think? Like, you know, if I play bad, is this guy going to kick me? Is this guy going to be, you know, going around my behind my back and trying to do something, you know, sketchy? Or that's the real problem. When things are going well, if they go well, if he joins, that's fine. Yeah, that's cool. But if things go bad, then it's going to go fall apart altogether. Imagine Device, an all-time, like I said, Hall of Famer. Is he going to accept Hunden the way he is? Does he care about this stuff? Glaive as well. You know, it's a matter of, those are household names with a long reputation, sure, between majors and everything. How are they going to fit in with a person like Hunden, right? We don't know what they think. Obviously, we're just speculating here. But it's a matter of relationships. If you talk about the in-game stuff, definitely he's shown that he has a lot of knowledge about in-game stuff. And he can, you know, bring a lot of things that are good for the team. But when the relationships between the players and the coach are also very important. So in case that happens, I don't know how is that going to work out. I think that's the key. If that works, if they accept it, if they don't care, like, okay, you did what you did, and it's all over now, you're fine, you're free, you can work, we can work together, we can bring back Astralis to where it was, then it's fine. Then it's a positive, and then we can, in 2 years, maybe, Maui, unlock that discussion. But the thing is, like, Right now, I just want to see the relationship which is going to be between Astralis as an organization, him, and the players. So, yeah.
I would also put out there the fact that I think that Astralis will reveal a new fifth. I don't think it's going to be Mister, and I think they're going to do that. They should do that in tandem with Hunden, so that like it'll actually kind of soften the PR blow that they get when they actually announce that. Because if you just announce straight up Hunden is our coach, everybody is going to tear Astralis apart. But if you say something like, Hunden's our coach, but Nico's our fifth. Danish Nico is our fifth. So I don't know who would be.
Yeah, just a random player.
Just a random name. That guy's our fifth. Then people are kind of like, wait, I want to judge the roster move, and I want to also chastise them for using Hunden. But, you know, like, one tweet is only enough for...
They
want to
soften the blow, is that what you're saying? But
they're
going to
soften the blow with that.
There is the bigger problem there. Zipnix. Hey, are we going to forget about that problem? And him and Blame playing the same thing over and over and over, and like we're going to pretend that nothing is happening and Device is back and everything is going to be fine? No. Zipnix, he needs to be replaced by somebody who can deliver a little bit more impact. He said in an interview, he's like, he's comfortable with the new roles and he's trying to find his old self and stuff like that. I don't think so. I think it's all the same thing. That's the main problem. I've been saying this for 2 years now. Like, they cannot be in the same team right now. It's just no way. You take Blame because he's more impactful. He's bringing more of the numbers. He's a better player right now overall. You compare Blame and Zipnix 2.5 years ago. Who would you pick? Zipnix, of course. Right now, it's a different story. That's the problem they need to solve as well.
Right, go on then. Maui, what's your next hot take?
Let me pull it up here. Oh, okay. That we are still, in some ways, as a community, reeling from the fact that Henry G wasn't successful after announcing the contract.
Right.
No, it's specifically the contract. So the fact that he was able to reveal contracts and the amount that players were earning was one of the best stepping stones to make CSGO jump to the next level in terms of discussion and having just well-rounded opinions in terms of how performances are.
Yes. I mean, here's the thing. If people don't get it, right, the reason this is a hot take, because obviously that point sounds fine in itself, but the reason it's a hot take is everyone else would claim on Reddit that it was only a negative that he did that and he made him look foolish. I see what you mean, right? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like people at the beginning, like some people were like, "Oh, I don't want people to know their salary, the player salaries." It's like, but like, look at every other sport we talk about, like in terms of just like regular sports. Like, I don't think you need to go one to one with all the regular sports comparisons all the time. But I do think one thing that they nailed is just like the potential for discussion when we know people's salaries. Like I don't think we would be. Just hypothetical, to bring it back to the last situation, if Zipnix's salary were like he's making 3K a month, just making like essentially for a pro player chump change, I don't think we'd really criticize him that much. We'd be like, oh, he took a huge discount just to be a core member of Astralis. But we know that's not the case.
Everyone always references it, unfortunately, because people know he has that giant contract. Yeah, it's the first thing they reference, like you said.
Yes, exactly. But because of his contract, we can be a little bit harder on him because we know he's got security and we know that he's also making a decent amount of money. But like when there's certain players that aren't really performing that well, like I'll just throw one out there, and Kassad, you might take issue with this, but like Richard is so hard on JKS, for example, because he knows JKS was making a good amount of money, like for what he was producing in the server. And I think that should always be something that people take into account for sports, because it's the entertainment industry, because people should be aware of the fact that if you're getting paid 20K a month, I don't know, I mean, like, then you should be performing like a 20K a month player. It gives us a basis for which to actually analyze or criticize or even praise someone. If Shush is on a deal where he's making 5K a month, then this guy is the sickest player.
I don't know. It's like, you cannot, like, base the performance based on his salary, right? I don't see it that way. The thing is, like, I agree with Richard when he says about JKS. You know, JKS was in deep five digits in 100 Thieves, in Complexity, and I'm assuming in G2. I really don't know. I would say I don't care. Sure. But I really don't know. And I would assume he's in five digits there. I don't know how deep. But the thing is, like, I never disagreed that JKS was playing bad last year or in Complexity. What I was like trying to explain is like that he was playing. What was the reason behind him playing that bad, right? But what he wasn't the player that he was in 2019 and some of 2020 right now. But like, what would you basically? What you said, like, if we get the information, basically, it's like we're getting more ammunition on like criticizing players right now. I
but
don't
we
know.
Also
if
can praise them more too.
When they have low salaries, the they're playing well. Yeah, I mean that's like, yeah, obviously. But how many times is that going to happen? Like instead of the opposite, yes. Right now, the mistake that Henry made is basically he revealed it immediately after the first player was signed, and then after the second and the third one asked more, and the fourth one wanted more, and the fifth one wanted more. Instead of like doing all the deals and then like, listen, we made this deal, it's worth this much money, this much money, this much money. I would like to see like the correct numbers when it comes to buyouts as well, instead of people hiding it and just being so vague about it. That's just bullshit, in my opinion. You can treat the traditional sports, the transfer market is there, you can see the transfers and the values and the salaries and everything, and that's fine. I don't have anything against that, but it needs to be done in a certain way so we avoid the Cloud Nine Colossus, you know, situation.
The thing is, I sort of see both sides of it. Like, for example, I agree with Maui's side, which is like, I know what you mean, Cassandra. You can't purely judge him off his salary, obviously. Like, for example, I'm sure when Yekindar was at his peak in Virtus Pro, you probably get fuck all compared to like a G2 player who probably got paid like a third of what they did. But he was a way better player and no one really factors that in. But I get what Maui means. What Maui also means, like he says there, is like, I know it wouldn't be used this way. Sadly, you're right. It would, they would just look for more players that they think are overpaid and just hate on them. That would be the way 90% of the time it was used. But for people like us, it would be really fucking useful. It'd be awesome for talk shows. Cause I've tried to do this when I know this info anyway. Like people will know famously, it was teams like the old Heroic and especially Big and fucking Ents back in the day. These are the teams I always said, mate, if they ever break top 10, like it might not even always be the players. The fucking GM of this team's fucking killing it. Like how's he doing that? Like that is like having like the 19th best Premier League team and you're like getting a fucking Champions League spot. Like what? Like you have killed the guy. So I actually think, by the way, for general managers and maybe, I don't know if coaches get a say in it, but whoever chooses the roster, I think for them it would be the most beneficial because you can basically see they're doing good deals. Because I've always thought the area we lack in esports is in real sports. I've seen this happen. The most famous example ever was probably when Carmelo Anthony went to the New York Knicks. But the problem is they were so horny to make this deal happen, they basically gave away like half their roster of other good players to make it happen. And in doing so, like, yes, on paper, it's great to say I'm the guy who signed Kemal Effort, but not if like the rest of the sentences, but I gave up all the other good players, so it was irrelevant anyway. We could never win the championship. If you say it like that, suddenly you don't sound like a great GM. You actually sound like a GM who got sort of like got dazzled by like a trick, like you saw something shiny and you followed it and you fell into a trap. So I would say there are elements. Like, I'll give you an example. I know Vitality themselves tried to stress, and they publicly said this openly in interviews and I think maybe in social media, they tried to stress the idea that they weren't the ones who like overbidded for the core of those Danish players, Magus, Dupree and Zonic, right? They tried to make it sound like there was other offers they had too, and they could have gone elsewhere, and then they even implied like maybe they could have had Rops, but they said no. Like, they do all that to try and tell you without us knowing the numbers, like, we did a good job with this business deal, you know, we got them for the right price and it was worth it, because they don't want to be perceived as like, oh, you're just idiots who just sent a blank check to the Astralis guys and were like, come and win with us, because that sounds great on paper, unless you really did just send them a blank check and you did terrible business. So the problem I have is I sort of do think it would be great for us. I agree, though. I also do think, sadly, fans will probably just use it to bash everyone all the time. I do think, though, one thing that would work slightly, Cassard, to push back a little bit is this. The reason it wouldn't be only hate is because I think the big problem of what Henry did is because he was the only one that explicitly did it. Remember, we only ever get the other numbers from, like, news reports of like, this is what device actually, you know, like a rough number, because he explicitly did it. The real problem is people don't know in the rest of the scene how overpaid other players were. So they didn't have any contrast. They thought only Henry did a shit job there. Like they thought, oh, it's our district tag. What an idiot. It's like, but actually, if you did know what some of the other teams paid for some of their players, especially the fucking NA teams, mate, that were mad underperforming, if you knew some of those guys, it's the reason why when everyone thinks I'm hating on Fallen, brother, if you knew what his salary was in Team Liquid and Imperial, you wouldn't think I'm hating on Fallen. You'd know, like, holy shit, are you just like the biggest Fallen fan ever guy paying this guy? Like, this is like some fucking vanity experience for you. It's not even a team. What are you doing? Like, because it's like I said, mate, I had a great line on Twitter. At the last major, there was an image where it was someone, I think it was Jocker Steve from Team Liquid, and it was him. He had Twists and he had Fallen. And all I had to say was make this Fitcher look utterly stupid was 2 years ago, Team Liquid traded the guy on the left, Twists, for this guy on the right, Fallen. Case closed. Don't need to say anything else. You look like a dickhead, Team Liquid. You look like absolute clown shoes. And then if I also add in similar sort of money. You fucking clowns. You sound like absolute children. You literally thought in 2021, Fallen was a better piece than Twists. You ever watched this game? Is this your first day? Did it, when you see he came from Source, do you come out of a fucking portal? Did it was Source yesterday for you? Like, what are you doing? We've had like 7, 8 years of this shit. So that's an example right there of where I do think, like, without knowing that info, you just sound like you're only judging them in the server or how legendary they are. Like, if you know that info, though, it's essential. That's actually the key detail from which you can judge some of these things. So I think there's something to both sides of this.
It's also like how marketable these players are, right? You sign Fallen to Liquid with ridiculous amount. You don't just sign him for the server. You sign him for the ridiculous amount of army of fans and the brand that he's bringing with him. And that's what you're paying, essentially, right?
Sure.
It's just, you know, the same thing goes for different players. But I have to save rescue Liquid a little bit here. The counter argument is the NAF transfer. Right? NAF was in Optic. They've been at E-League Season 2, or Season 1 was Season 2, I think. And he was transferred there. He was, like, sitting there. The team was in shambles. They got Hiko and, like, all this nonsense, you know, that was happening in that team. We got him for maybe, I think it was 80k-ish, if I remember correctly. And then Liquid got him from us for 150,000 back in the day. So look what they got from him since then. They had an era. They won a Grand Slam. He was one of their main players, still is. So that was a good deal for them. So, you know, bad deals are going to be made, but good deals. Sure. It's important how, like, all, like you said, all the information that you can get and all the value that you can get from the players. I don't know how much value they got from Fallen in terms of, like, how many jerseys they sold, how many, you know, revenue they got from him as him, you know, advertising the org and whatever, right? But I assume it's not a little because he is an army of fans. But when it comes to the server stuff, obviously they didn't get much. And still they don't have much as far as this 2022 goes. So there is a, you know, both sides to this story. Look at Monesi. He was paid $600,000.
I bought for that, yes.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, his potential might be over a million, but his value was tops maybe 150,000. That's it. Yes. I wouldn't pay more than that. So, and that's why G2 didn't have enough money to buy something else and go somewhere else. So it's a game of, you know, being who is going to be the most capable GM right now and who is going to be doing this, the things right. But at the end, to Maui's hot take, I definitely do agree that these things, like showing, you know, the salaries, the contracts in some specific way, it can be done. But you said there's going to be a lot of pressure from the public, from the, you know, the community. So fucking what? Like, the game is growing. Yeah. The game is growing. Like, look at football. Look at how many fans are in football, in basketball, in areas. Like, they're criticizing all the players all the time. I'm sitting in my, you know, couch watching Bayern Munich losing to, you know, Köln or something, and I'm swearing at Thomas Müller, who is, like, you know, getting paid 300 million or whatever, right? Because he missed something. That's what I do. You know, I was thinking, like, oh, what the hell am I doing? Am I this guy?
Oh, we're all fans in the other games. We're not experts in, of course. Yes,
you know,
of course.
So the same thing goes in esports. Like, we're growing. It's going to be a much bigger, you know, base of fans who's going to be criticizing you if you play bad and you have $50,000 salary. That's just the way
it is. By the way,
either you handle it or you don't.
Also, just to echo what Kassad said earlier, just so it's explicit and people don't know, that's the part that everyone doesn't get about Richard's criticism of JKS, which shows they don't listen, by the way. He's repeated it a million fucking times. Richard isn't just going, like, I don't like JKS the player and think he is bad. Because what everyone did in Complexity is they were like, he was all right. It's like, motherfucker, he was being paid like he was Nico. Guess what? You get paid like you're Nico, you better be Nico. Like, at that point in time, it's a totally fair judgment. Like, he wasn't being paid to be, like you say, Maui, if he was on 3K a month in Complexity, he was there just to make up numbers. Yeah, we can make all the forgiving fucking remarks we want. But if you get paid like you're Nico, and remember, that team was good before he joined. He was supposed to take you to the absolute top if you did it right. Now, look, I would also spin it out and put some blame on Call, which is, if you pay someone like Nico, idiot, don't let them just take their third best role. Yeah, that doesn't make sense from your org side, does it? You're the idiot as well there. But at the same time, I totally get why Richard was like, what? Why are you all overrating the JKS guy? But To me, the real problem with that is that take was never going to be received well by fans because they won the Katowice event with him as a stand-in. So that's just one of those moments. That's like the fucking combo breaker from fans that ruins every analyst's point because that one thing makes it seem legit. In the same way as, even though I've never understood this at all, people really do think Fallen making it one Swiss system extra but still failing and having zero chance to go on top 8 in that major proves that, like, I was wrong that he was overrated. As though that has any bearing on, like, his whole career. Like, no one gives a fuck about one extra Swiss system, guys. Like, that's irrelevant. Like, go on then.
Yeah. All right. For example, Lukowsky was recently bought out, like Fluxo bought him from Sharks, and that number went public. It was $329,000.
Oh, what the fuck?
It looked ridiculous. It looked like insane that they bought him for that much. But now they're just cleaning house in Brazil. Like, they're winning every.
Who's this guy's agent? Fucking Sam Bankman-Fried. Who the fuck? $300,000. What?
Yeah, exactly. Paid for that. I don't know if Fluxo is necessarily, but it's kind of unbelievable. But I think that team is just to give them some added pressure. They spent a lot of money to put that lineup together. Okay. They bought Lukowsky for over $300K, and I think they're definitely making the next major, not winning it. They're definitely making it through the America's RMR. I think it made sense for them to spend.
But if his contract is like 12 months from now, right? I would just go, listen, Lukowsky. Or whatever his name is. Like, listen, stay in that team for a year, come to me after 12 months, and I'll give you 120,000 signing bonus.
Yes.
Play there, develop for a year. We'll wait. We'll sit and wait. You know, play with what we can, and then the 12 months expire. I'll come to you, I'll give you $100,000 as a signing bonus. I get you for free, I get you a decent salary, and I have you for the next 3, 4, 5, 7 years, right? Instead of paying $325,000. It's just stupidly crazy. Yes. Like, that's what I'm saying, Duncan. Like, these people who are making those decisions are so dumb that I want to throw up when I hear this news. Like, it makes me physically sick when I see something like that. So it's just, you should not have told me this, Maui. It's just
right, okay, then. My day. Kassad, what is your next hot take?
Oh, okay.
Come on, hit me.
So, I was thinking between two, and I'm going to go with this one. Complexity should fire their whole team right now.
It's not even like, you know, this guy. No. It's like just, he just cleans house. Like, you're off. He's like on some Elon Musk shit. Like, right, I've taken over Complexity. Everyone's fired. Clear out your desk.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Go on.
Look at this team. Like, ever since the Jason Lake went public after that major and said, like, was it Berlin, I think? Yeah, it was Berlin.
Yes.
It was like, yeah, the juggernaut, we're here to stay, we're whatever. Like, he put the money where his mouth was, that's fine. Ever since then, they have accomplished absolutely nothing. They came into this last year, right now, with this extra salt lineup that had potential. They played 12 months. They managed to absolutely do nothing. Like, look at the events they're playing. They didn't qualify for the last major. They played Elisa in Finland. They didn't go through the groups there, which was a semi-good event, tier two at the best. They're playing cash cups right now, and they had the perfect moment to fire them all, except maybe Floppy, but that's just one person. But the thing is, like, as soon as you don't qualify for the major, right there, I'm just ripping off your contracts. You're free to go wherever you want. I have October, November, December, half of January to just make a plan. I'm a partnership team with Blast. Yeah, I'm a partnership team with ESL. I paid all this money to get into these positions, and I'm bad throughout 3 years right now. So instead of firing them right now after the RMR, they keep them and playing these cash cups so they can retain some points and maybe be in a contention for a play-in Katowice, or I don't know what the deal is. I assume that's the deal. And that's it. I don't know how much they're paying. It doesn't really matter how much. If they pay him 1K, it's 1K too much. Because this team, this organization, has two most influential slots in our ecosystem right now, in Blast, in Pro League. So fire them, make a plan for three. You have 3.5 months to make a plan, sign a contract, get to develop your team, and go into 2023. They're not doing literally anything right now, playing cash cup. So what's going to happen? At the break is going to start. They're going to come back. Maybe they get into the Katowice plane. Maybe they try to get into the major. Let's not forget the American lost one spot at the major, so that's one spot less to qualify for Paris in April, May, or whatever it is. And we know that these Brazilian teams are on the lookout. You said it yourself, Maui, Fluxo, and all these kids right now. They're looking to grab those spots. We already know that two of them are going to be going towards Furia and Liquid. So there's three more spots left. You think Complexity is going to be one of those? I don't think so. So instead of firing all of them and getting, you know, something different, getting fresh in 2023 with a plan, they're just continuing like this. Nothing's happening, and they're just going to keep cruising like a mediocre team they are, even less than that. And they keep these spots in Pro League and ESL, four events guaranteed, maybe even five through the year. While some teams right now, they're struggling so hard. They're getting to these events. They're battling. They're just playing in Europe with all these competitions. They cannot get through. So in my opinion, Complexity needs to go different way. They need to fire them all and just start over.
Come on then, Maui, because if people don't know, we haven't really talked that much about Complexity, but I get the vibe. You're one of those people where it's like, you have like a soft spot for this team. And also like they are almost good enough for you to get into them.
Yeah, I'm glad that Kassad said maybe keep Floppy, because I think that he's the easiest to keep. I think that he's shown a lot. I do think that it wouldn't hurt to change this team up by now. I think that, I mean, if I'm going to be as hard as I am on Cloud9 and Nafoni, I should be that same way on this team, because yeah, they have the spots, they've had the opportunities, and I would right now, if I have to keep two people from the team, I would do Floppy and Grim, because I think they play actually kind of like some selfless roles. I think actually I think Fang gets kind of set up more than some of the other guys, and yet he doesn't always deliver. Like, he's kind of streaky, kind of inconsistent, but I've seen enough from Grim and Floppy, especially given the fact that they kind of just molded Grim to be this anchor player that kind of had to just take, like, you know, he plays like the pit spots, the back silo on nuke type of stuff. Floppy plays like kind of like the worst spot on nearly every map. And I'd say that both of those guys are actually doing better than some of the guys where it seems like the system should be helping them more. So that actually draws into question how good JT has been as an in-game leader. It draws into question, can Fang perform when he's that guy that's supposed to be succeeding? And then right now with Halzerg, I don't really have a great beat on this guy yet, you know? Like, it's been just really, for me, I saw him at ESL Pro League, where they actually almost took down FaZe in the playoffs, and then at the RMR, where he was okay, but he also kind of, like, mentally speaking, is sometimes a little bit too much of a wild card. Like, he's yelling when they're winning, but when he's upset, he's, like, pounding the table, and it's kind of like, I don't know if you really want that for your opper. You kind of want a guy that's just a more stable force in general. So Would I eviscerate the entire team? No. Would I be down to swap out three of the players? Yeah. If they want to make it European and tell Grim and Floppy, you guys are on one-way trips to Europe right now, and we're going to just build a European team, but we're down to keep you guys because we see something in you, that's where I would go with the team.
Here's the thing. I actually love this Kassad take, because now I had never actually thought about, I don't think about this team very much, I'm surprised. Who gives a fuck? They're just like on the border of like the relevant status for me. I actually was mega underwhelmed by them failing to beat Imperial and qualify to the major. Like, for real, I thought on paper, like, that was pathetic. Like, they actually were a better team than Imperial, and Imperial was right there for the taking. It's just Complexity played like the biggest pussies of all fucking time. Just go watch this game. It's actually like embarrassing how they play. Like, they just literally like, it's like, I mean, the joke is, it's like Fallen's just mind it's fucking mind controlling them all. It's just walking in with his crosshair in every 1v1. Like, what are you doing? Like, have you never watched a Fallen demo? Like, give me a break. Like, I complain about people not knowing how to play against Jayme. Like, Fallen's got one of the most iconic fucking clutch styles of all time. Like, how do you think he's just sitting holding an angle, you moron? You think he's not pushing through and going for some close range combat AWP, or that he's going to take a gamble and go through some? Of course he is. That's what he does every fucking time. You never seen a frag move. But I understand in the moment, you're thinking differently. You have all the pressures. You're thinking things like, just don't fuck up. Maybe he just a mistake. Like, you're doing all the mistakes the amateurs do. But that was, to me, that was like the last moment I could really give a solitary fuck about Complexity, because I sort of agree with Kassad. When I look at the whole team, the problem this team has goes like this: because the old Complexity was spending big and it was all about, and then they brought this lineup and it was just a free PR win. It's like, hey, you know all those NA players that everyone loves but can't get in a big org? We're just going to sign all of them. Like, what a minute, what? No, just all of them. We're going to make like a shit mini old school team Liquid, where it's like all the stars, and just hope it works. somehow. And it, spoiler, it has never worked. Like, never at one point in time, unlike all Team Liquid, do they all frag out at the same time. It's like they take fucking turns. One guy has a good game, the other guy has a whack game. And I think if you actually look at most of them just are surplus to requirements. Like, I'm with you. If I had to pick players, it'd probably go in this order. Floppy and Grim, and then that's it. I'm not taking anyone else. That's if I even keep anyone. Because if I look at the others, mate, this lineup actually is mega underwhelming. Fang used to be considered the best player in Extra Salt. He's just a fucking nobody. He's just okay. He's okay. Best case, okay. JT is fucking Hunden crystal levels of bad at fragging. I'm just going to say it right now. He is just bad at fucking playing Counter-Strike with the gun and the crosshair. And the problem is, like, spoiler, he doesn't have fucking Simple on his team. He's going to need to do something. So already he is surplus to... He should be a coach. It's just obvious to me. Seems like he has a good understanding of the game. Should just be a coach. Holzerk is one of the most over-fucking-rated players I've ever seen. He only skated by because he played in the shit Dignitas, where it was like he was the only player that had any potential. And then I've seen him in these LAN games. He's just... He isn't bang average Opera. I don't know what anyone sees in him. Just all right. That's it. So to me, it's like... People just overreact to, like, one flick he does in a half or something. Like, he's just not a top player, mate. And then, like, even Grim hasn't actually performed to the level people think he has. He just had CVs every now and then when he went crazy. That's it. So I actually do think it's sort of a waste of time. Like, even if, as Kassad says, even if it's a budget roster, you'd want a budget roster that has more potential, like, that actually has ups and downs. Like, you know what? We were talking earlier about that Fluxo team. Dude, the Fluxo team at least sometimes looks dangerous, or, like, a couple of the players look like they can develop more. This team, I have to say, a bunch of these players have played a few years now. It looks just plateaued and it just didn't work as a premise. Like, my hope when they made the lineup was it would just be like every player would play his like hypothetical career peak and they just frag out. It would just be like a fragging team, you know, and they just get something done. But I agree, they haven't really done anything. I don't get what the theme is aside from NA, which, by the way, I'll just say this right now. Fans will tell you on Twitter and Reddit, I've seen this in League of Legends and CSGO, oh, we just want NA teams, we'll support them. They don't support them. They do not. The joke is even the NA pan probably fucking cheering for Fallen. You can't, not fucking Grim or Fang. When they say that, spoiler, I'll translate what fans say. When they say we'll cheer for an NA team, they mean one with a leash twist, snarf, like, yeah, exactly, all the fucking big names that are already at the top of the game. Spoiler, you're not cheering for your country then, you're cheering for people who are good at the game, which is the ultimate secret of every fan base. Realistically, unless you've got a legend like Fallen or something like that who has like some legacy fans, people are just fans of top teams and players no matter what they tell you. It isn't even about the region. Like, spoiler, here's why I know it's not about being from NA, mate. If I was Complexity, the two obvious angles you go to get a replacement team, it ain't NA, it would be either South America, in the sense there's loads of talent. But the problem with South America to me is, I think there's something off with like the IGLs or the coaches there, because it looks like not many of them can actually get the potential to work internationally. So I have to say, it's not the popular angle. But who gives a fuck about like NA pride? I'll just go get CIS players, I'm telling you right now. There's just too much talent in that fucking scene. You go over there and you get the right person to pick out the players, mate. You could have a team, like, think about Team Spirit. I don't even think they're good, but fucking hell, they're in the playoffs of majors, boys. They're right, and people like Wonderful, look, they could be really good. So I would just cut, I agree with you, because I would boot the whole team. Fuck like rebuilding and Frank. I'd cut the whole team and I'd go get some CIS squad and I'd use this money to pay, by the way, use this money, you could pay and get proper players from that region.
Yeah, and they would be happy. They would be happy with the salary as well.
And like I say, if they win, don't worry, the fans are going to support them. I guarantee you. I guarantee. Yes.
And they would have the support of the CIS region too. So
yeah, true.
It's just, I mean, there is so many regions they can go to. Obviously, we are abandoning NA right now, but for a reason as well.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
Let's just not forget that. But overall, waste of money, waste of spots. It's just fire them all and move on.
I can already tell, Mari, this show's going to be straight fire just from the fact we're just casually saying, yeah, fire them all. Fire them all.
I know.
Right, all right, here's one for you. Here's one for you. This is a good one. Because this is also, I'll give you a quick lesson in hot takes, guys, if you're out there. Don't do hot takes like this, because it'll ruin your career and your sanity and reputation. But the reason I do hot takes like this, are you ready, Cassandra? When you find this out, it's almost going to trigger you, because it's going to make you realize I am almost like a masochist. For some fucked up, like, intellectual honor reason, I actually believe that you should give your hot take at the moment when it seems like the opposite is happening. I know that sounds so fucked up, but the point is, that's how you win the best in the long run. So what happens is, if everyone, like, so for example, when did Aflame Fallen? Like, I did literally do it the day after he, like, carried a series at the major, like, looked really good. So that was the moment I was like, oh, you all think he's good. I think he's the most overrated player of all time. And then obviously everyone's like, what the fuck? because they're just literally seeing him win the game, right? So with that said, get ready for my hot take. I've phrased this very carefully, boys. Cadian will never win a major as the primary AWPer. There you go. I'll let you guys go first. What do you think on this?
Because
the point is, it's going to be a very unpopular take, obviously. Come on, what would you say, Cassad? He'll never as a key crit as a primary AWPer.
Yes, absolutely agree. I think, you know, that he's a good captain. He is the one that was carrying this team. He's the heart and soul of the heroic lineup.
Yeah, for sure.
He was the one who you know got them together. As a primary AWPer, I don't think he can do it. I don't think he has his prime when he was able to do it, including this last major, was his absolutely best chance to do it. I don't think he's gonna repeat again. They're absolutely playing good right now. Everybody will agree. They've been the blast. They've played the major finals. They're playing with a standee now. So, you know, when they fail, it's not gonna count, you know, all that bullshit. But I do agree that his prime at that position to win a major is not gonna happen. Simply because he had his chance, he's not a young guy anymore, and they're like, you know, their moment was there. You know, there is like a couple of moments in your career where you can do something great, and either you do it or you don't.
They all say in American sports, you know, you window. Yeah, that was when the window was open, yes.
Yes, the window was open for him on this one,
yes.
And sadly they lost it, and I don't think he's going to repeat anymore.
What do you think, Maui?
Well, I would say that the best chance that Cadian's ever going to have to win a major just passed. So that's kind of where it's hard to imagine that there's going to be an easier run to the grand finals, or even that they'll have another crack at it. So I'll try to open up that point. You say as an AWPer, I don't know if I'm just going to say ever. I'm just going to say ever, because I don't know how he could be a rifler and do it. Like he's too weak as a rifler. I've never seen Cadian do anything good enough as a rifler that makes me think he'll be any better than like Hooksy on the rifle. Like he's just not that great with the weapon. So if he has to primary rifle, then he's just a hindrance to the team as a player. I think the AWP right now is a crutch for him in terms of like, it's the only way he's going to get kills. Like do you really remember like many Cadian pistol rounds?
Not
like,
really.
Like maybe he'll like the best I think I've seen him do is like a 1v2 with a Glock, you know, like that might have happened one time, but usually he doesn't even put himself in situations like that. He's never the guy that, like, really is going to pick up the hero rifle because he knows he's just, like, probably the fifth weakest rifler on his team, and he should be. So I'll just say, period, I don't think he's going to win a major. I think that opportunity's passed. It would be, like, I don't know how long this game would have to keep going and how long he'd have to persevere, but I think that he's kind of seen the peak of it in the fall finals. I think he can win tournaments like that. I think obviously they just did, but I don't think that for the next major, a couple of the teams are going to ramp back up again. I think the phases are going to be good again. I think there's a couple. I think G2 will probably actually be a lot better by then, too. But I think there's a few teams that should be knocking on the door. And Heroic, like, they were that team to me that for a long time, why I thought they actually probably were okay with keeping refreshes, that they were making, like, finals a lot. They were making semifinals a lot at big tournament, or like at least in the online era, they were doing very well. And they were, I thought that, you know, if they keep that lineup, they're just going to win one. They're going to win one tier one event. And that's kind of what the fall finals read to me as. They won that one event. And if they just want to hang on, that's fine. But when teams are really ramping up for what they consider the premier events, the majors, the Cologne, Katowice, it's impossible for me to see them winning those now.
The reason I purposely said player, AWPer, is because I do think, put it this way, if you made him just the IGL and you bring in a really good AWPer, like if they'd gotten device, now maybe it is possible. Like I do think, by the way, as an IGL, I think he's done an amazing job.
Oh, the joke as an IGL, he's great.
The joke is, I think he's just mega overrated as an AWPer. Like Janko, here's the thing, all you need to know is this. When Janko himself was like, no, he is like good enough. It's like, bro, the word enough is doing too much heavy lifting there. Like, yeah, you mean he's good enough now to win an incredibly narrow final other people carry against like a maybe slightly off-centered fate. Like, how many fucking conditions am I putting in? And spoiler, like you guys just said, mate, the second Fury beat Na'Vi at that major, and Cloud9, remember, had already lost on the other side of the bracket. If Heroic was ever going to win it, that was it. That was the craziest window I've ever seen. Like, fair play to German outsiders, they did take advantage of that window. You missed your chance, Cadian. Like, that was it, mate. Like, you will never get a better chance to win a major than you have to beat Fury in a semi. Fury's never even been in a semi-final of a major, and it's Fury, boys. They're another team that's capitulated in the big matches. Fury in a semi, and then in the final, you're playing outsiders. Look, I know they had a miracle run there. Outsiders didn't even have to beat super duper mega amazing teams, all time historical. They didn't even have to do it themselves. So it's like, if you're not going to win that one, I don't think you're going to do it. And then crucially, when the ankle's like, they're just good enough. Yeah, he means in these games. It's not going to, that can't hold. I've seen Cady an AWP for a long time now. I remember when he was just the AWP before he was the IGL. He's just not an elite player in that sense. He's not bad. And also, here's another problem I have with him as the AWP as well. I've got to throw this in. Is I also think, dude, sometimes he just caught, like, you know what? I couldn't have even made this the hot take. It's just, this is too mean. The hot take would be like, he actually holds Heroic back because it's like some vanity project for him. Like, bro, the amount of times I've seen in like a massive match, they're holding so they can do some boost so he can take the hot pick. It's like, you know, you have players in your team like fucking Stown, mate. I'd be worried about getting him his frags. Like, he's going to win us the game. You're just on some shit 4 years ago. I can't believe I get to fucking pick simple now. Like, that's like some vanity project shit. Like, you're not going to win the game doing that, bro. Like, you get the one kill, yeah, every now and then. And then also, let's be real. I'll actually give him props, by the way. If you only saw recent CS, if you're some casual fan, he actually did also play way better at that major than he normally does. Like, those were like way above elevated numbers. Normally, if you don't know, he is the fucker that's using the primary AWP all the time and getting like a 0.105 rating or something. He's not some elite player in our game. So to me, I get why people like him. And I agree with all the things he said, by the way. I do think he is the heart and soul of the team. There probably would be no team like this with all these players, and they wouldn't be at the level they're at if he wasn't. That's why I really hope he just stays as the IGL and they should eventually pick up some young talent that becomes some baller up, and then we don't have to have this awkward conversation.
The joke is just that Cadian is the second best offer on his team and Stown's the best also.
Yes.
It's especially like going like different direction in the future where he becomes the IGL, because let's be honest, he did a good job. The moves, like, if you look at their games, they have like a solid gameplay, the moves, the individual little things. Like, it's fine. Like, people are copying that. It's innovative. It's all right. Like, but he's 27 years old. He has an expiration date when it comes to fragging, and you want your AWP to be fragging. You want to be impactful. So he has an expiration right there. So in the future, if there's some sort of Danish talent superstar Oper comes in and then he becomes the IGL, there is a chance for him to continue his legacy and be in more events and more and more. But right now, I mean, the new generation of young players that are coming in with your Monesis and Yekindars and, you know, Exiles and all these people that are coming up, you know, and Bit as well. So it's like, it's going to be very hard for Heroic as a team to, you know, to get to stay on the same level for more than a couple of months. So because it's going to be very competitive, I just hope that G2 does something useful so they can be competitive too. Right now, it's because like there's only three or four teams right now that are actually, you know, can be considered a tier one, in my opinion. But yeah, definitely Cadian. The window was there. I just go back to 2019. We had the window in Berlin Major that we were playing really well and we didn't use it and it sucked. It never came back again. Never.
Yes.
No, we tried it the next year and it sucked.
You know, that's the other part that fans don't realise, because even pro players get caught in that. I've heard in sports, it's super legendary, by the way. If you make like a final early in your career, you think, it's no problem, I'll be back. And then sometimes you never ever make it back.
It's very difficult. People tend to fade away very quickly, like in this Counter-Strike. So it's very hard to stay on top for a long time. So we go back to that point of simple, or how ridiculously, you know, good he is when he's like the best player in the world for the past 5-6 years. You know, it's super difficult to stay the best for like 6 months, not for 6 years. But I do have to go back to your point when it comes to making a hot take as an opposite. That is exactly what I did for G2 and the Pro League thing. Like, everybody go G2, yeah, and Maui was like tweeting at me. He's like, listen, Kasa, this team is going somewhere. Okay. Stuff like that, okay. Right? And I was just like, yep, no. And then that was a shit storm on Twitter. Like, I was getting messages. I was getting all that shit talk. And how about now, dickheads?
There we go, he's been waiting for that. By the way, if no one knows, that's not only like in itself entertaining, it is just basically the dream of every analyst to be able to do what Richard did there to all their fans, just go back and do what they do, just like go back on some shit from 3 months ago where they said, yeah, that's like everyone's like secret fucking fantasy to do that, but the rest of us can't do it. Whereas, by the way, that has, if you are an analyst, that video has infinite replay value. You can just watch it anytime you're feeling down or hungover, just pop that on, it'll perk you right up. Do you have a hot take? Maui, do you have a hot take?
I have like two, actually. I mean, I could do one that kind of builds off it, or we could switch to like a different topic. I think You know what? I kind of want to switch to this one. Yeah, I want to switch to this one because I think that Kassad in particular, I brought this up to him, I think, at the major. And I mean, let's just hear it. I'll just go with it. Okay. So I think that my rifler of the year is Axile. My rifler of the year is Axile. And okay. I think he's the most impactful. I made this claim back at ESL Pro League, and I just brought it up to Bleh. I brought it up on the desk. I was like, I think he's the rifler of the year. And then I started digging into the stats, and it actually all backed it up. Like, it basically was like, it was a claim that I made first, because when you watch Cloud9, so much of what they had to accomplish was based off of him or Shiro just like hand spoon feeding them rounds. And like, I've been so against the style that they play, the tactics, the calling from Nafani, but one thing you can't take away is how effing good Axile has been for the vast majority of this year. And I think that, like, the Dallas win doesn't happen without him. Like, FaZe, even with a hungover FaZe, they were gonna win that event if it weren't for Axile just absolutely destroying them on some of those maps. So I think that without him, Cloud9 wouldn't have the championship yet. Nafani himself should be thanking Axile for keeping his job intact, because if they didn't win that Dallas trophy, okay, if they lost in the quarterfinals right there, then Nafani is gone already for sure. It's okay. Not Inters, it's Nafani and Inters probably. And so in terms of impact like that, I think that Axile's been the best. As an anchor, the dude almost always gets 2 kills. Like, when are you seeing Axile just get run over on a bomb site? The answer is never. He's doing stuff with such minimal resources. Like the flash assists for this team were so abysmal, and yet he's still on T side doing so well as an individual. Like, when are you seeing riflers finding consistent success without good flash setup? It's so rare to see that kind of stuff. So for me, he's the complete picture. He can play some of the hard spots on CT side. He can play a style on T side that doesn't help him at all, and yet he still is putting up massive numbers. He's still finding impact. He still won a trophy this year and an MVP.
You disagree with that, Kassad? Was that a take?
If there was a button to disagree, you know that. Yeah. I would press it right now, but okay. The thing is, like, I'll tell you why. I would just keep holding on it. Yeah. The thing is, I'll tell you why he's never going to be the better rifler than, for example, Nico. And let's take 2022, for example, or any other year that you want to take. And the Exile is the player that his opportunities are being created for him by Nafani being aggressive, by Inters being in his bitch roles, by, you know, the whole team is creating opportunities for him to react on. Nico, on the other hand, has the same or more impact in 2022 by creating opportunities by himself and getting the same impact as Exile by creating opportunity for himself instead of being created for him. Like, if you take G2 for example, this terrible year of 2022, okay, who created the opportunity for Nico? Hooksy? He can't hit the water if he fell out of a boat. Straight up.
I've heard that one. That's pretty good. Go on. That was like a Serbian one. Okay.
Yeah. JKS, we already discussed how bad he played. Hunter, super defensive player this year. Yeah. He wasn't like that before. He's playing too defensively. And who else is left? Monesi with a good impact overall as an entry, like as an opener. Okay, he gives some space to Nico. Everything else is designed and executed and created by Nico himself, and he keeps the high standard, the high rating, and the high impact. As the opposite of, obviously, we have Exile, who is exceptional rifler. I'll tell you, like, he's top 2, top 3, he's up there. I'm not arguing that he's a extraordinary player, right? He grew tremendously in the past 12 months or more, 18 months, let's say it like that. But the difference is much clearer to me when the player is creating something for himself rather than the team does it for him. Obviously, he has a title in Dallas that can kind of put him over the edge, maybe in your eyes. But overall, I think that Nico, for example, is a rifler of the year for me. I may be a little bit biased because it's Nico, right? But I'm just looking realistically on the teams, how they play, how the roles are. If you take a look at the demo of Exile on short, when he plays Catwalk on Mirage, he's super defensive there. His utility usage is, you know, on point. He's waiting for the opportunity. He's waiting for the round to develop, and then he strikes. Then he rotates. Then he finishes the round. Look at Nico, who plays the CT side connector. He's going for the kills. He's getting the flash. He's swinging the smoke. He's rotating back to side to help first Jax, now JKS, and all these players. He's, you know, being active, proactive around the map, and that's what, for me, is more impactful rather than Exile. They're close enough, but different styles, which for me personally, as a coach before, and now a person who watches a lot of CS and does the analyst work, I think that the impactfulness of that type of player is more valuable to the team than exiles.
Yeah, that's the thing I would ask actually, Maui. How do you value that aspect? I'll give I've taken a second. I want to get your follow up, which is like he essentially did it more like value to the team. When you say like rifler of the year, what does rifler of the year mean to you?
So it's performance along with impact, I'd say, and also kind of like having to so Nico and Axile have both shouldered a lot of the burden, and that's something I factor in here because, for example, I wouldn't give it to someone on FaZe because it's the load is spread so evenly that it is pretty hard to just pick one person. Like, I would want to say Twist personally, maybe even Rops, but it's just that you can't really choose between one or the other. But whereas for Cloud9 and for G2 for that matter, you do pick one. You do just pick one. And I don't think there's any debate whether the Rifler of the Year is either Nico or Axile. It has to be one of those two for me. Like, the distant third, you can't even. I don't even really think there's anybody else, actually. Like, I think some plebs would say, like, blame. I don't know who would say Blame F, actually. Not
Basically,
even
the other
plebs.
two
Like,
names, like you say, we Twist because he won the championship, so we Blame F because he put up numbers. But realistically, they're not really in the equation, sure.
Yeah, so for me, I kind of just think that I actually think that the system that Nico works in is like, see, this is where I think we'd actually just have to go to bat on like position by position. We'd have to really break it down. Like, is Nico getting more help or is Axel getting more help? And I think that for me, from what I'm seeing, I think that G2, at least because, for example, Nico can sometimes bait Hooksy. Like, he gets that resource, whereas Axile kind of has to do a little bit more on his own sometimes for me. Like when Hooksy joined the roster, sometimes he's running ahead of Nico up at Banana, but when it was the Alexi B roster, like, Nico was actually like that first guy at Banana to move forward on T side. So it kind of like shifted for Nico over the year, whether he had to be like the first guy or not. But I can agree that on CT side, Nico is oftentimes opening things up more. But it's just that, I mean, like, it's kind of like, does Monacy take the initiative or is it Nico? It's usually one of those two. And for the CT side, for Cloud9, it's kind of like, is Shiro doing it, Nafani or Axel? But like, it's just that sometimes they put him in such a shit situation. They sometimes fight. Like, I think that Nico almost always gets to dictate what he gets to do in the round, whereas Axel sometimes just finds himself in these shit situations that Nafani
Okay.
or Cloud9 put himself in, and he does still bail them out. Nico isn't really, like, to me, always a bailout guy. He's just the guy that's going to open things up more than Axel. So it's kind of like, do you pick the guy that's like going for the openers, or do you get the guy that's like he has to now win the 2v4? And
I'll
I
ask you
pick
this.
Axel here.
Well, I'll ask you this. Like, look at when they had Jax, right? And now they had Hooksy playing the same entry role. You said, like, obviously, Hooksy sometimes is going in front of Nico to create some space so Nico can trade and get some decent positioning and whatever, right? So, and you take Nafani in front of Exile. Who is better in creating better position for their player? Nafani for Inters, or Nafani for Exile, or Hooksy for Nico?
You would say, I mean, Hooksy will hold W until he's dead. Whereas Nafani will actually try to shoot his opponent. So
Exactly what I'm saying.
there is some help in terms of that, but in terms of spacing, then you could give it like Hooksy is using himself as a resource. Like, he's literally just running into his own and the team's own
Well, just
detriment.
throw a
So
flash instead, you'll see like the
see, here's the
same
thing.
effect.
Maui needs to get hired by Hooksy as like his fucking PR spin agent because he's taken the fact that, like, I would describe Hooksy fragging wise Maui as an empty chair. And you were like, exactly, look at all that space he's created. You know, it allows other people. Yeah, exactly. You're his spin
Hooksy
doctor.
sometimes still uses the role like
Oh
how
my lord.
Freakazoid said it, talked about it back in like
Yes.
2014 or 15, where it's like, if my IGL tells me to go, I'm gonna run my head through the
Yes.
brick wall. And it's like, Hooksy
Exactly.
does that for himself now.
Yeah, he's just his own
Hooksy's
guy.
most
Yeah.
like Freakazoid, actually, if you go player to player.
Here's the joke. Hooksy's best strat is Hooksy go don't kill. Hooksy go
Yeah,
die.
Nico
That's,
clean
yeah,
Nico trade. Nico
exactly.
trade is the answer
Right,
there.
I'll come in as the voice of reason here. Because the problem is, I actually
Oh
can see
no.
both sides of this debate. Like, for example, the reason why it's actually quite easy to potentially put Axile as the player of the year from rifle position is because, one, the stats are fucking impressive. They're very, very impressive if people haven't looked at the land stats. And then secondly, I would just say he has more because his team has had very up and down time, but when they're on, they're on. He just has more memorable big series series, like all the ones against FaZe obviously come to mind immediately. He's just had some really massive series where he went crazy numbers wise, and it's really easy to think of that. And if you only think of that, he would win in a landslide. The problem is, I do think when you do things like Player of the Year, it's every match you played. It's your whole body of work for that year. And the thing is, I actually think if you look at it, Nico is the more consistent player of the two, in my opinion. And to play to some what Cassad says, I think it's less dependent on team factors. Like, I really do think, I mean, it's one of the things I always give props to Nico for, actually. As much as, yes, he may be in some teams socially or whatever, has had issues with play. One thing you cannot deny with this guy is he does come, he's not, it's like he's American, native language, English speaker. This is his second language, and he is, like Simple, one of the only players I've ever seen that I do believe you could drop in any team and he will be really good. Might not be his best, but he'll be really good. That's alien in Counter-Strike. Like, in Counter-Strike, you need teammates that you have a background with, similar philosophy, like, you understand. Like, these guys don't need that. Like, the joke was simple, he didn't even need to comm. Nico can comm anyway, and he'll just make it work. So, I know why people, conversely, they're going to think of all the big series G2 losing. Like, Nico can't be that good. Like, just go look at the rest of his body of work, though. Just watch every game this year, and mate, like, you'll be shocked by how many times he's fragged out and how big the kill per round numbers are. Like, it's actually pretty impressive. I agree, it's not his best year ever. He's had some way better years, but still a very impressive year. And bear in mind, it has been the fucking nightmare CT side. There's the other reason that I would argue against the Axile angle. I think also Axile's numbers are slightly inflated on CT side because his whole team is just a CT fucking monster. Like, that was like one of their best strengths, is those roles. G2 isn't that same team. I know on paper they should have really great players. They've never gotten going with this team in the same way. So I also feel like, I think Nico's worked with a much harder like set of players in that regard. So I could see myself leaning the Nico side on that one.
Just one little small argument. Let's compare like these 2 years, I mean this year, for these two players and teams. In terms of like circumstances in this team, let's say Cloud9x Gambit, from a percentage from 1 to 100, from 0 to 100, they were about 80% comfortable, right? They had this 20% when they were like switching the orgs at some point, and like it was difficult because of the Gambit and the Russian organization. And that's like, that takes away 20% of their comfort in terms of a team stability and everything, right? And then go shift to G2 and all the bullshit they had to go through in this year, right? Alexi, not Alexi, JKS, Monesi, you know, coach going, first coach going, then the second one coming in, and then, you know, Alexi leaving, and then they're getting hooksy, then the manager leaves, and the coach leaves, and everything that's happening, that's very stressful, right? That's very, very stressful for everyone involved. And then still, next to that, Nico managed to deliver exceptional numbers once again. That's kind of, you know, my argument that would support Nico a little bit more rather than Exile. Stability is the one of the key things in the team if you want to perform on the decent level.
I guess my last thing for Exile is that it's just the phase series he's played. The phase series he has played this year, like, basically he's been the phase killer. So that to me is kind of one of those, like, in big moments against the best teams, he's been doing
Dude,
so much.
You could genuinely argue
to get them over,
if you think of how key it was, because you know they always used to play him in every bloody quarterfinal of every tournament. Like, you could argue he's the reason FaZe doesn't have their era.
Yeah. Yeah. So
he is one of the key factors. They don't, but they have themselves to blame. But that's FaZe is another hot take for another show. But the thing is, like, yeah, he contributes a lot for them not winning more titles than they should have, definitely.
Also, I'll just throw this in there as a last detail, because I just looked it up. If you actually look, because I know it's a stat people don't often use, but I do think it can be quite interesting. If you look where, like, the team fragging rating, right? If you look over 2022, Cloud9 actually on LAN is the highest rated team. G2 doesn't even make the list, like the top 8 or whatever they put on HLTV. So all I'll say is, I know on paper it was supposed to be like a super team for G2 at times. It never manifested in the server guys. So I would just say that the Cloud9 team, I think overall, was better. Let's be real.
Absolutely.
That's safe to say.
Yeah. Even they were like, you know, twice as better than G2 was this year. You know, we have to be real with the situation and the results. Like, look at the results, look at the majors, look at everything that was happening in the team and outside the team, and the stability of the whole team is just that Cloud9 was twice as better than G2 in 2022.
So, I mean, then actually, then I would continue to say that that's also kind of why Exile is the best rifler for me. He's done it more often at deeper portions in tournaments. Okay. And that's why, like, it's on those bigger stages. Like, if Nico, like, you can't use this as a benefit to Nico, really, where it's like, he didn't play the last major. Like, he didn't even get to perform on that stage. And so we don't know. And, like, that's why, like, Axile didn't have a great major, but Nico had no major. So I don't even know who you really take there, because you should have just made it through the RMR, Nico.